Her own son, Asclepius? Should I go on? Shut up, me, I thought back. Hazel seems more worried about you, I ventured. She mentioned some crazy stunts in the last battle? Frank squirmed as if trying to shake an ice cube out of his shirt. It wasn't like that. I just did what I had to. And your piece of tinder? I pointed to the pouch hanging from his belt. You're not worried about what Ella said? Something about fires and bridges? Frank gave me a dry little smile. What, me worry? He reached into the pouch and casually pulled out his life stick, a chunk of charred wood the size of a TV remote control. He flipped it and caught it, which almost gave me a panic attack. He might as well have pulled out his beating heart and started juggling it. Even Hannibal looked uncomfortable. The elephant shifted from foot to foot, shaking his massive head. Shouldn't that stick be locked in the Principia's vault? I asked. Or coated in magical flame retardant, at least? The pouch is flameproof, Frank said. Compliments of Leo. Hazel carried it for me for a while. We talked about other ways to keep it safe, but honestly, I've kind of learned to accept the danger. I prefer having the firewood with me. You know how it is with prophecies. The harder you try to avoid them, the harder you fail. I couldn't argue with that. Still, there was a fine line between accepting one's fate and tempting it. I'm guessing Hazel thinks you're too reckless?
That's an ongoing conversation.
He slipped the firewood back in its pouch.
I promise you, I don't have a death wish. It's just, I can't let fear hold me back. Every time I lead the Legion into battle, I have to put everything on the line. Commit to the battle 100%. We all do. That's the only way to win.
That's a very Mars thing to say, I noted. Despite my many disagreements with Mars, I mean that as a compliment. Frank nodded.
You know, I was standing right about here when Mars appeared on the battlefield last year. Told me I was his son. Seems like so long ago.
He gave me a quick scan.
I can't believe I used to think
that I was your father, but we look so much alike.
He laughed. Just take care of yourself, okay? I don't think I could handle a world with no Apollo in it.
His tone was so genuine it made me tear up. I'd started to accept that no one wanted Apollo back. Not my fellow gods, not the demigods, perhaps not even my talking arrow. Yet Frank Zhang still believed in me. Before I could do anything embarrassing, like hug him or cry or start believing I was a worthwhile individual, I spotted my three quest partners trudging toward us. Lavinia wore a purple camp t-shirt and ratty jeans over a silver leotard. Her sneakers sported glittery pink laces that matched her hair and no doubt helped her with her stealthy moves. Her Manu Ballista clunked against her shoulder. Hazel looked slightly more ninja-esque in her black jeans and black zip-front cardigan, her oversized cavalry sword strapped to her belt. I recalled that she favored the Spatha because she sometimes fought on horseback while riding the immortal steed Arion. Alas, I doubted Hazel would summon Arion for our quest today. A magical horse wouldn't be much use for sneaking around an underground tomb. As for Meg, she looked like Meg. Her red high tops and yellow leggings clashed epically with her new unicorn t-shirt, which she seemed determined to wear until it fell to pieces. She had applied adhesive bandages across her cheekbones, like warriors or footballers might do. Perhaps she thought they made her look commando, despite the fact that the bandages were decorated with pictures of Dora the Explorer. What are those for? I demanded.
They keep the light out of my eyes.
It'll be nighttime soon. We're going underground.
They make me look scary.
Not even remotely.
Shut up,
she ordered. So, of course, I had to. Hazel touched Frank's elbow. Can I talk with you for a sec? It wasn't really a question. She led him out of earshot, followed by Hannibal, who apparently decided their private conversation required an elephant.
Oi,
Lavinia turned to Meg and me. We may be here a while. When those two start mother henning, I swear, if they could encase each other in styrofoam peanuts, they would. She sounded part judgmental, part wistful, as if she wished she had an overprotective girlfriend who would encase her in styrofoam peanuts. I could very much relate. Hazel and Frank had an anxious exchange. I couldn't hear their words, but I imagined the conversation went something like, I'm worried about you.
No, I'm worried about you.
But I'm more worried.
No, I'm more worried.
Meanwhile, Hannibal stomped and grunted like he was enjoying himself. Finally, Hazel rested her fingers on Frank's arm, as if she were afraid he might dissolve into smoke. Then she marched back to us. All right, she announced, her expression dour. Let's go find this tomb before I change my mind. Chapter 15. Nightmare Carousel. Totally let your kids ride. I'm sure they'll be fine.
Nice night for a hike, Lavinia said.
The sad thing was, I think she meant it. By that point, we'd been trekking through the Berkeley Hills for over an hour. Despite the cool weather, I was dripping sweat and gasping for breath.
Why did hilltops have to be uphill?
Lavinia wasn't satisfied with sticking to the valleys either. Oh no! She wanted to conquer every summit for no apparent reason. Like fools, we followed her. We had crossed the borders of Camp Jupiter without a problem. Terminus hadn't even popped up to check our passports. So far, we had not been accosted by ghouls or panhandling fawns. The scenery was pleasant enough. The trail wound through sweet-smelling sage and bay laurel. To our left, silver luminescent fog blanketed the San Francisco Bay. Before us, the hills formed an archipelago of darkness in the ocean of city lights. Regional parks and nature reserves kept the area mostly wild, Lavinia explained.
Just be on the lookout for mountain lions, she said. They're all over these hills.
We're going to face the undead, I said, and you're warning us about mountain lions? Lavinia shot me a look like, dude. She was right, of course. With my luck, I would probably come all this way fighting monsters and evil emperors, only to get killed by an overgrown house cat. How much farther? I asked.
Not this again, Lavinia said. You aren't even carrying a coffin this time. We're about halfway there.
Halfway? And we couldn't have taken a car or a giant eagle or an elephant? Hazel patted me on the shoulder. Relax, Apollo. Sneaking up on foot draws less attention. Besides, this is an easy quest. Most of mine have been like, go to Alaska and fight literally everything along the way. Or sail halfway across the world and be seasick for months. This is just go over that hill and check on a merry-go-round. A zombie-infested merry-go-round, I corrected. And we've been over several hills. Hazel glanced at Meg.
Does he always complain this much?
He used to be a lot whinier.
Hazel whistled softly.
I know, Meg agreed. Big baby.
I beg your pardon, I said.
Shh,
Lavinia said, before blowing and popping a giant pink bubble.
Stealth, remember?
We continued along the trail for another hour or so. As we passed a silver lake nestled between the hills, I couldn't help thinking it was just the sort of place my sister would love. Oh, how I wished she would appear with her hunters. Despite our differences, Artemis understood me.
Well, okay, she tolerated me. Most of the time. All right, some of the time. I longed to see her beautiful, annoying face again. That's how lonely and pathetic I had become. Meg walked a few yards ahead of me, flanking Lavinia so they could share bubblegum and talk unicorns. Hazel hiked at my side, though I got the feeling she was mostly trying to make sure I didn't collapse. You don't look so good, she noted. What gave it away? The cold sweat? The rapid breathing? In the darkness, Hazel's gold eyes reminded me of an owl's, supremely alert, ready to fly or pounce as needed. How's the gut wound? Better, I said, though I was having more and more trouble convincing myself. Hazel redid her ponytail, but it was a losing battle. Her hair was so long, curly, and luxurious it kept escaping its scrunchie. Just no more cuts, all right? Is there anything else you can tell me about Tarquin? Weaknesses, blind spots, pet peeves? Don't they teach you Roman history as part of Legion training? Well, yes. But I may have tuned out during the lectures. I went to Catholic school back in New Orleans in the 1930s. I have a lot of experience in tuning out teachers. I can relate. Socrates. Very smart, but his discussion groups, not exactly riveting entertainment. So, Tarquin. Right. He was power mad, arrogant, violent, would kill anyone who got in his way. Like the emperors. But without any of their refinement. Tarquin was also obsessed with building projects. He started the Temple of Jupiter, also Rome's main sewer. Claim to fame. His subjects finally got so weary of taxes and forced labor that they rebelled. They didn't like digging a sewer? I can't imagine why. It occurred to me that Hazel wasn't so much interested in information as she was in distracting me from my worries. I appreciated that, but I had trouble returning her smile. I kept thinking about Tarquin's voice speaking through the ghoul in the tunnel. He had known Hazel's name. He had promised her a special place among his undead horde. Tarquin is sly, I said. Like any true psychopath, he has always been good at manipulating people. As for weaknesses, I don't know. His relentlessness, maybe? Even after he got kicked out of Rome, he never stopped trying to win back the crown. He kept gathering new allies, attacking the city over and over again, even when it was clear he didn't have the strength to win. Apparently, he still hasn't given up. Hazel pushed a eucalyptus branch out of our way. Well, we'll stick to the plan. Get in quietly, investigate, leave. At least Frank is safe back at camp. Because you value his life more than ours? No. Well, you can leave it at no. Hazel shrugged. It's just that Frank seems to be looking for danger these days. I don't suppose he told you what he did at the Battle of the New Moon? He said the battle turned at the Little Tiber. Zombies don't like running water. Frank turned the tide of battle, almost single-handedly. Demigods were falling all around him. He just kept fighting. Shape-shifting into a giant snake, then a dragon, then a hippopotamus? She shuddered. He makes a terrifying hippo. By the time Reyna and I managed to bring up reinforcements, the enemy was already in retreat. Frank had no fear. Her voice tightened. I don't want to lose him. Especially after what happened to Jason. I tried to reconcile Hazel's story of Frank Zhang, fearless hippo killing machine, with the easygoing, big, cuddly praetor who slept in a yellow silk jammy shirt decorated with eagles and bears. I remembered the casual way he'd flipped his stick of firewood. He'd assured me he didn't have a death wish. Then again, neither had Jason Grace. I don't intend to lose anyone else. I told Hazel.
I stopped short of making a promise. The goddess of the River Styx had excoriated me for my broken oaths. She'd warned that everyone around me would pay for my crimes. Lupa, too, had foreseen more blood and sacrifice. How could I promise Hazel that any of us would be safe?
Lavinia and Meg halted so abruptly, I almost ran into them.
See?
Lavinia pointed through a break in the trees. We're almost there. In the valley below, an empty parking lot and picnic area occupied a clearing in the redwoods. At the far end of the meadow, silent and still, stood a carousel, all its lights blazing. Why is it lit up? I wondered. Maybe somebody's home, said Hazel.
I like merry-go-rounds, said Meg,
and she started down the path. The carousel was topped by a tan dome like a giant pith helmet. Behind a barricade of teal and yellow metal railings, the ride blazed with hundreds of lights. The painted animals threw long, distorted shadows across the grass. The horses looked frozen in panic, their eyes wild, their forelegs kicking. A zebra's head was raised as if in agony. A giant rooster flared its red comb and stretched its talons. There was even a hippocampus like Tyson's friend Rainbow. But this fish pony had a snarling face. What sort of parents would let their children ride such nightmarish creatures? Maybe Zeus, I thought. We approached cautiously, but nothing challenged us. Neither living nor dead. The place seemed empty, just inexplicably lit up. Meg's glowing swords made the grass shimmer at her feet. Lavinia held her Manu Ballista, primed and ready. With her pink hair and gangly limbs, she stood the best chance of sneaking up on the carousel animals and blending in with them. But I decided not to share that observation, as it would no doubt get me shot. Hazel left her sword in its sheath. Even empty-handed, she radiated a more intimidating demeanor than any of us. I wondered if I should pull out my bow. Then I looked down and realized I had instinctively readied my combat ukulele. Okay, I could provide a jolly tune if we found ourselves in battle. Did that count as heroism?
Something's not right, Lavinia murmured. You think?
Meg crouched. She put down one of her swords and touched the grass with her fingertips. Her hand sent a ripple across the lawn, like a stone thrown in water.
Something's wrong with the soil here, she announced. The roots don't want to grow too deep.
Hazel arched her eyebrows. You can talk to plants.
It's not really talking, Meg said. But yeah, even the trees don't like this place. They're trying to grow away from that carousel as fast as they can.
Which, since they're trees, I said, is not very fast. Hazel studied our surroundings. Let's see what I can find out. She knelt at the edge of the carousel's base and pressed her palm against the concrete. There were no visible ripples, no rumbling or shaking, but after a count of three, Hazel snatched her hand away. She staggered backward, almost falling over Lavinia.
Gods. Hazel's whole body trembled. There's a massive complex of tunnels under here.
My mouth went dry.
Part of the labyrinth? No, I don't think so. It feels self-contained. The structure is ancient, but it also hasn't been here very long. I know that doesn't make sense.
It does, I said. If the tomb relocated.
Or regrew, Meg offered. Like a tree clipping, or a fungal spore.
Gross, said Lavinia. Hazel hugged her elbows.
The place is full of death.
I mean, I'm a child of Pluto. I've been to the underworld. But this is worse somehow.
I don't love that,
Lavinia muttered.
I looked down at my ukulele, wishing I'd brought a bigger instrument to hide behind.
A stand-up bass, perhaps?
How do we get in? I hoped the answer would be, gosh darn it, we can't.
There. Hazel pointed to a section of concrete that looked no different from the rest.
We followed her over.
She ran her fingers across the dark surface, leaving glowing silver grooves that outlined a rectangular slab the size of a coffin.
Oh, why did I have to make that particular analogy?
Her hand hovered over the middle of the rectangle.
I think I'm supposed to write something here. A combination, maybe?
To open his door, Lavinia recalled. 254.
Wait!
I fought down a wave of panic. There are lots of ways to write 254.
Hazel nodded.
Roman numerals, then?
Yes, but 254 would be written differently in Roman numerals than 254, which is different from 2 and 54.
Which is it, then? Meg asked.
I tried to think. Tarkin would have a reason to choose that number. He'd make it about himself.
Lavinia popped a small, stealthy pink bubble.
Like using your birthday for your password?
Exactly, I said.
But he wouldn't use his birthday, not for his tomb.
Perhaps his date of death? Except that can't be right.
No one's sure when he died, since he was in exile and buried in secret. But it had to have been around 495 BCE, not 254.
Wrong date system,
Meg said.
We all stared at her.
What?
She demanded. I got raised in an evil emperor's palace. We dated everything from the founding of Rome. AUC?
Ab urbe condita, right?
My gods, I said.
Good catch, Meg.
254 AUC would be, let's see, 500 BCE. That's pretty close to 495.
Hazel's fingers still hesitated over the concrete.
Close enough to risk it?
Yes, I said,
trying to channel my inner Frank Zhang confidence. Write it as a date. 254. CCLIV.
Hazel did.
The numbers glowed silver. The entire stone slab dissipated into smoke, revealing steps leading down into darkness.
Okay then, Hazel said. I have a feeling the next part is going to be harder.
Follow me. Step only where I step, and don't make any noise.
Chapter 16. Meet the new Tarquin. Same as the old Tarquin, but with a lot less flesh. So, no jolly tunes on the ukulele then.
Fine.
I silently followed Hazel down the steps into the Marigo tomb. As we descended, I wondered why Tarquin had chosen to reside under a carousel. He had watched his wife run over her own father in a chariot. Perhaps he liked the idea of an endless ring of horses and monsters circling above his resting place, keeping guard with their fierce faces, even if they were ridden mostly by mortal toddlers, who, I suppose, were fierce in their own way. Tarquin had a brutal sense of humor. He enjoyed tearing families apart, turning their joy into anguish. He was not above using children as human shields. No doubt he found it amusing to place his tomb under a brightly colored kiddie ride. My ankles wobbled in terror. I reminded myself there was a reason I was climbing into this murderer's lair. I couldn't remember what that reason was at the moment, but there had to be one. The steps ended in a long corridor, its limestone walls decorated with rows of plaster death masks. At first, this did not strike me as odd. Most wealthy Romans kept a collection of death masks to honor their ancestors. Then I noticed the masks' expressions. Like the carousel animals above, the plaster faces were frozen in panic, agony, rage, terror. These were not tributes. They were trophies. I glanced back at Meg and Lavinia. Meg stood at the base of the stairs, blocking any possible retreat. The glittery unicorn on her t-shirt grinned at me hideously. Lavinia met my eyes as if to say, "Yes, those masks are messed up. Now keep moving." We followed Hazel down the corridor, every clink and rustle of our weapons echoing against the barreled ceiling. I was sure the Berkeley Seismology Lab, several miles away, would pick up my heartbeat on their seismographs and send out earthquake early warnings. The tunnel split several times, but Hazel always seemed to know which direction to take. Occasionally, she'd stop, look back at us, and point urgently to some part of the floor, reminding us not to stray from her path. I didn't know what would happen if I took a wrong step, but I had no desire to have my death mask added to Tarquin's collection. After what seemed like hours, I began to hear water dripping somewhere in front of us. The tunnel opened into a circular room like a large cistern, the floor nothing but a narrow stone path across a deep, dark pool. Hooked on the far wall were half a dozen wicker boxes like lobster traps, each with a circular opening at the bottom just the right size for, oh gods. Each box was the right size to be fitted over a person's head. A tiny whimper escaped my mouth. Hazel glanced back and mouthed, "What?" A half-remembered story floated up from the sludge of my brain. How Tarquin had executed one of his enemies by drowning him in a sacred pool, binding the man's hands, placing a wicker cage over his head, then slowly adding rocks to the cage until the man could no longer keep his head above water. Apparently, Tarquin still enjoyed that particular form of entertainment. I shook my head. "You don't want to know." Hazel, being wise, took my word for it. She led us onward. Just before the next chamber, Hazel held up a hand in warning. We halted. Following her gaze, I could make out two skeleton guards at the far side of the room, flanking an elaborately carved stone archway. The guards faced each other, wearing full war helmets, which was probably why they hadn't spotted us yet. If we made the slightest sound, if they glanced this way for any reason, we would be seen. About 70 feet separated us from their position. The floor of their chamber was littered with old human bones. No way could we sneak up on them. These were skeleton warriors, the special forces of the undead world. I had zero desire to fight them. I shivered, wondering who they had been before the Uranomoi stripped them to the bones. I met Hazel's eyes, then pointed back the way we'd come. "Retreat?" She shook her head. "Wait." Hazel shut her eyes in concentration. A bead of sweat trickled down the side of her face. The two guards snapped to attention. They turned away from us, facing the archway, then marched through, side by side, into the darkness. Lavinia's gum almost fell out of her mouth. "How?" she whispered. Hazel put her finger to her lips, then motioned for us to follow. The chamber was now empty, except for the bones scattered across the floor. Perhaps the skeleton warriors came here to pick up spare parts. Along the opposite wall, above the archway, ran a balcony accessed by a staircase on either side. Its railing was a latticework of contorted human skeletons, which did not freak me out at all. Two doorways led off from the balcony. Except for the main archway through which our skeleton friends had marched, those seemed to be the only exits from the chamber. Hazel led us up the left-hand staircase. Then, for reasons known only to herself, she crossed the balcony and took the doorway on the right. We followed her through. At the end of a short corridor, about 20 feet ahead, firelight illuminated another balcony with a skeletal railing, the mirror image of the one we'd just left. I couldn't see much of the chamber beyond it, but the space was clearly occupied. A deep voice echoed from within, a voice I recognized. Meg flicked her wrists, retracting her swords into rings. Not because we were out of danger, but because she understood that even a little extra glow might give away our position. Lavinia tugged an oilcloth from her back pocket and draped it over her monoballista. Hazel gave me a look of warning that was completely unnecessary. I knew what lay just ahead. Tarquin the Proud was holding court. I crouched behind the balcony's skeletal latticework and peered into the throne room below, desperately hoping none of the undead would look up and see us, or smell us. Oh, human body odor. Why did you have to be so pungent after several hours of hiking? Against the far wall, between two massive stone pillars, sat a sarcophagus chiseled with bas-relief images of monsters and wild animals, much like the creatures on the Tilden Park carousel. Lounging across the sarcophagus lid was the thing that had once been Tarquinius Superbus. His robes had not been laundered in several thousand years. They hung off him in moldering shreds. His body had withered to a blackened skeleton. Patches of moss clung to his jawbone and cranium, giving him a grotesque beard and hairdo. Tendrils of glowing purple gas slithered through his ribcage and circled his joints, coiling up his neck and into his skull, lighting his eye sockets fiery violet. Whatever that purple light was, it seemed to be holding Tarquin together. It probably wasn't his soul. I doubted Tarquin ever had one of those. More likely it was his sheer ambition and hatred, a stubborn refusal to give up no matter how long he'd been dead. The king seemed to be in the midst of scolding the two skeleton guards Hazel had manipulated.
"Did I call you?" demanded the king. "No, I did not. So why are you here?"
The skeletons looked at each other as if wondering the same thing.
"Get back to your posts,"
Tarquin shouted. The guards marched back the way they had come. This left three Yurnamoy and half a dozen zombies milling around in the room, though I got the feeling there might be more directly beneath our balcony. Even worse, the zombies, Vrekolokai, whatever you wanted to call them, were former Roman legionnaires. Most were still dressed for battle, in dented armor and torn clothing. Their skin puffy, their lips blue, gaping wounds in their chests and limbs. The pain in my gut became almost intolerable. The words from the Burning Maze prophecy were stuck on replay in my mind. Apollo faces death. Apollo faces death. Next to me, Lavinia trembled, her eyes tearing up. Her gaze was fixed on one of the dead legionnaires, a young man with long brown hair, the left side of his face badly burned. A former friend, I guessed. Hazel gripped Lavinia's shoulder, perhaps to comfort her, perhaps to remind her to be silent. Meg knelt at my other side, her eyeglasses glinting. I desperately wished I had a permanent marker to black out her rhinestones. She seemed to be counting enemies, calculating how fast she could take them all down. I had great faith in Meg's sword skills, at least when she wasn't exhausted from bending eucalyptus trees. But I also knew these enemies were too many, too powerful. I touched her knee for attention. I shook my head and tapped my ear, reminding her that we were here to spy, not to fight. She stuck out her tongue. We were simpatico like that. Below, Tarquin grumbled something about not being able to find good help.
Anyone seen Caelius? Where is he? Caelius!
A moment later, a Yurnamos shuffled in from a side tunnel. He knelt before the king and screamed,
Eat flesh! Soon!
Tarquin hissed.
Caelius, we've discussed this. Keep your wits.
Caelius slapped himself in the face.
Yes, my king.
His voice now had a measured British accent.
Terribly sorry. The fleet is on schedule. It should arrive in 3 days, just in time for the Blood Moon's rising.
Very well. And our own troops. Eat flesh!
Caelius slapped himself again.
Apologies, sire. Yes, everything is ready. The Romans suspect nothing. As they turn outward to face the emperors, we will strike.
Good. It is imperative we take the city first. When the emperors arrive, I want to be already in control. They can burn the rest of the Bay Area if they wish, but the city is mine.
Meg clenched her fists until they turned the color of the bone latticework. After our experiences with the heat-distressed dryads of Southern California, she had gotten a little touchy whenever evil megalomaniacs threatened to torch the environment. I gave her my most serious, stay cool, glare, but she wouldn't look at me. Down below, Tarquin was saying,
And the Silent One?
He is well guarded, sire,
Caelius promised. Tarquin mused.
Double the flock. Nevertheless, we must be sure.
But, my king, surely the Romans cannot know about Sutro.
Silence!
Tarquin ordered.
Caelius whimpered. Yes, my king. Flash! Sorry, my king.
Eat flash!
Tarquin raised his glowing purple skull toward our balcony. I prayed that he hadn't noticed us. Lavinia stopped chewing her gum. Hazel looked deep in concentration, perhaps willing the undead king to look away. After a count of 10, Tarquin chuckled.
Well, Caelius, it looks like you'll get to eat flesh sooner than I thought.
Master?
We have interlopers.
Tarquin raised his voice.
Come down, you four, and meet your new king.
Chapter 17. Meg, don't you dare. Meg! Or you could just get us killed. Yeah, sure. That works too. I hoped there were four other interlopers hidden somewhere on this balcony. Surely Tarquin was talking to them and not us. Hazel jabbed her thumb toward the exit, the universal sign for Let's Vamoose. Lavinia began crawling that way on her hands and knees. I was about to follow when Meg ruined everything. She stood up tall, well, as tall as Meg can be, summoned her swords, and leaped over the railing. Meg! I shouted. Half war cry, half, what in Hades are you doing? Without any conscious decision, I was on my feet, my bow in hand, an arrow knocked and loosed, then another and another. Hazel muttered a curse no proper lady from the 1930s should have known, drew her cavalry sword and jumped into the fray, so Meg would not have to stand alone. Lavinia rose, struggling to uncover her Manu Ballista, but the oilcloth seemed to be stuck on the crossbeam. More undead swarmed Meg from under the balcony. Her twin swords whirled and flashed, cutting off limbs and heads, reducing zombies to dust. Hazel decapitated Caelius, then turned to face another two Uranimoi. The deceased former legionnaire, with the burned face, would have stabbed Hazel in the back, but Lavinia loosed her crossbow just in time. The imperial gold bolt hit the zombie between the shoulder blades, causing him to implode in a pile of armor and clothes.
"Sorry, Bobby,"
Lavinia said with a sob. I made a mental note never to tell Hannibal how his former trainer had met his end. I kept firing until only the arrow of Dodona remained in my quiver. In retrospect, I realized I'd fired a dozen arrows in about 30 seconds, each a kill shot. My fingers literally steamed. I hadn't unleashed a volley like that since I was a god. This should have delighted me, but any feeling of satisfaction was cut short by Tarquin's laughter. As Hazel and Meg cut down the last of his minions, he rose from his sarcophagus couch and gave us a round of applause. Nothing sounds more sinister than the ironic slow clap of two skeletal hands.
"Lovely," he said. "Oh, that was very nice. You'll all make valuable members of my team."
Meg charged. The king didn't touch her, but with a flick of his hand, some invisible force sent Meg flying backward into the far wall. Her swords clattered to the floor. A guttural sound escaped my throat. I leaped over the railing, landing on one of my own spent arrow shafts, which are every bit as treacherous as banana peels. I slipped and fell hard on my hip. Not my most heroic entrance. Meanwhile, Hazel ran at Tarquin. She was hurled aside with another blast of unseen force. Tarquin's hearty chuckle filled the chamber. From the corridors on either side of his sarcophagus, the sounds of shuffling feet and clanking armor echoed, getting closer and closer. Up on the balcony, Lavinia furiously cranked her Manu Ballista. If I could buy her another 20 minutes or so, she might be able to take a second shot.
"Well, Apollo," said Tarquin,
purple coils of mist slithering from his eye sockets and into his mouth. Yuck.
"Neither of us have aged well, have we?"
My heart pounded. I groped around for usable arrows, but found only more broken shafts. I was half tempted to shoot the arrow of Dodona, but I couldn't risk giving Tarquin a weapon with prophetic knowledge. Can talking arrows be tortured? I didn't want to find out. Meg struggled to her feet. She looked unhurt but grumpy, as she tended to whenever she got thrown into walls. I imagine she was thinking the same thing I was. The situation was too familiar. Too much like Caligula's yacht when Meg and Jason had been imprisoned by Venti. I couldn't let another scenario like that play out. I was tired of evil monarchs tossing us around like rag dolls. Hazel stood, covered head to toe in zombie dust. That couldn't have been good for her respiratory system. In the back of my mind, I wondered if we could get Justicia, the Roman law goddess, to file a class action suit on our behalf against Tarquin for hazardous tomb conditions. "Everyone," Hazel said, "back up." It was the same thing she'd told us in the tunnel to camp, right before turning the Uranimos into ceiling art. Tarquin just laughed.
"Ah, Hazel Levesque, your clever tricks with rocks won't work here. This is my seat of power. My reinforcements will arrive any moment. It will be easier if you don't resist your deaths. I'm told it's less painful that way.
Above me, Lavinia continued to crank her hand cannon. Meg picked up her swords. Fight or run, guys! The way she glared at Tarquin, I was pretty sure I knew her preference.
Oh, child,
Tarquin said.
You can try to run, but soon enough, you'll be fighting at my side with those wonderful blades of yours. As for Apollo, he's not going anywhere.
He curled his fingers. He was nowhere close to me, but my gut wound convulsed, sending hot skewers into my ribcage and groin. I screamed. My eyes welled with tears.
Stop it!
Lavinia shrieked. She dropped from the balcony and landed at my side.
What are you doing to him?
Meg charged again at the undead king, perhaps hoping to catch him off guard. Without even looking at her, Tarquin tossed her aside with another blast of force. Hazel stood as stiff as a limestone column, her eyes fixed on the wall behind the king. Tiny cracks had begun to spiderweb across the stone.
Why, Lavinia, the king said, I'm calling Apollo home.
He grinned, which was the only facial expression he was capable of, having no face.
Poor Lester would have been compelled to seek me out eventually, once the poison took hold of his brain. But getting him here so soon, this is a special treat.
He clenched his bony fist tighter. My pain tripled. I groaned and blubbered. My vision swam in red Vaseline. How was it possible to feel so much pain and not die?
Leave him alone!
Yelled Meg. From the tunnels on either side of Tarquin's sarcophagus, more zombies began to spill into the room.
Run!
I gasped.
Get out of here!
I now understood the lines from the burning maze. I would face death in Tarquin's tomb, or a fate worse than death, but I would not allow my friends to perish too. Stubbornly, annoyingly, they refused to leave.
Apollo is my servant now, Meg McCaffrey,
Tarquin said.
You really shouldn't mourn him. He's terrible to the people he loves. You can ask the Sibyl.
The king regarded me as I writhed like a bug pinned to a corkboard.
I hope the Sibyl lasts long enough to see you humbled. That may be what finally breaks her. And when those bumbling emperors arrive, they will see the true terror of a Roman king.
Hazel howled. The back wall collapsed, bringing down half the ceiling. Tarquin and his troops disappeared under an avalanche of rocks the size of assault vehicles. My pain subsided to mere agony levels. Lavinia and Meg hauled me to my feet. Angry purple lines of infection now twisted up my arms. That probably wasn't good. Hazel hobbled over. Her corneas had turned an unhealthy shade of gray. We need to move. Lavinia glanced at the pile of rubble. But isn't he not dead? Hazel said with bitter disappointment. I can feel him squirming under there, trying to... She shivered. It doesn't matter. More undead will be coming. Let's go. Easier said than done. Hazel limped along, breathing heavily as she led us back through a different set of tunnels. Meg guarded our retreat, slicing down the occasional zombie who stumbled across our path. Lavinia had to support most of my weight, but she was deceptively strong, just as she was deceptively nimble. She seemed to have no trouble hauling my sorry carcass through the tomb. I was only semi-conscious of my surroundings. My bow clanged against my ukulele, making a jarring open chord in perfect sync with my rattled brain. What had just happened? After that beautiful moment of godlike prowess with my bow, I'd suffered an ugly, perhaps terminal setback with my gut wound. I now had to admit I was not getting better. Tarquin had spoken of a poison slowly making its way to my brain. Despite the best efforts of the camp's healers, I was turning, becoming one of the king's creatures. By facing him, I had apparently accelerated the process. This should have terrified me. The fact that I could think about it with such detachment was itself concerning. The medical part of my mind decided I must be going into shock. Or possibly just, you know, dying. Hazel stopped at the intersection of two corridors. I'm not sure.
What do you mean?
Meg asked. Hazel's corneas were still the color of wet clay. I can't get a read. There should be an exit here. We're close to the surface, but I'm sorry, guys. Meg retracted her blades.
That's okay. Keep watch.
What are you doing?
Lavinia asked. Meg touched the nearest wall. The ceiling shifted and cracked. I had a fleeting image of us getting buried like Tarquin under several tons of rock, which in my present state of mind seemed like an amusing way to die. Instead, dozens of thickening tree roots wriggled their way through the cracks, pushing apart the stones. Even as a former god accustomed to magic, I found it mesmerizing. The roots spiraled and wove themselves together, shoving aside the earth, letting in the dim glow of moonlight until we found ourselves at the base of a gently sloping chute. A root chute? With handholds and footholds for climbing. Meg sniffed the air above.
Smells safe. Let's go.
While Hazel stood guard, Meg and Lavinia joined forces to get me up the chute. Meg pulled, Lavinia pushed. It was all very undignified, but the thought of Lavinia's half-primed Manu Ballista jostling around somewhere below my delicate posterior gave me an incentive to keep moving. We emerged at the base of a redwood in the middle of the forest. The carousel was nowhere in sight. Meg gave Hazel a hand up, then touched the trunk of the tree. The root chute spiraled shut, submerging under the grass. Hazel swayed on her feet.
Where are we?
This way, Lavinia announced.
She shouldered my weight again, despite my protestations that I was fine. Really, I was only dying a little bit. We staggered down a trail among the looming redwoods. I couldn't see the stars or discern any landmarks. I had no idea which direction we were heading, but Lavinia seemed undeterred.
How do you know where we are?
I asked.
Told you, she said. I like to explore.
She must really like Poison Oak, I thought for the umpteenth time. Then I wondered if Lavinia simply felt more at home in the wild than she did at camp. She and my sister would get along fine.
Are any of you hurt? I asked. Did the ghouls scratch you?
The girls all shook their heads.
What about you?
Meg scowled and pointed at my gut.
I thought you were getting better.
I guess I was too optimistic.
I wanted to scold her for jumping into combat and nearly getting us all killed, but I didn't have the energy. Also, the way she was looking at me. I got the feeling that her grumpy facade might collapse into tears faster than Tarquin's ceilings had crumbled. Hazel eyed me warily.
You should have healed. I don't understand.
Lavinia, can I have some gum? I asked.
Seriously? She dug in her pocket and handed me a piece.
You're a corrupting influence.
With leaden fingers, I managed to unwrap the gum and stick it in my mouth. The flavor was sickly sweet. It tasted pink. Still, it was better than the sour ghoul poison welling up in my throat. I chewed, glad for something to focus on beside the memory of Tarquin's skeletal fingers curling and sending scythes of fire through my intestines. And what he had said about the Sibyl. No, I couldn't process that right now. After a few hundred yards of torturous hiking, we reached a small stream. We're close, Lavinia said. Hazel glanced behind us. I'm sensing maybe a dozen behind us, closing fast. I saw and heard nothing, but I took Hazel's word for it. Go. You'll move faster without me.
Not happening, Meg said.
Here, take Apollo. Lavinia offered me to Meg like I was a sack of groceries. You guys cross the stream. Go up that hill. You'll see Camp Jupiter. Meg straightened her grimy glasses. What about you? I'll draw them away. Lavinia patted her monoballista.
That's a terrible idea, I said.
It's what I do, Lavinia said. I wasn't sure if she meant drawing away enemies or executing terrible ideas. She's right, Hazel decided. Be careful, Legionnaire. We'll see you at camp. Lavinia nodded and darted into the woods. Are you sure that was wise? I asked Hazel. No, she admitted. But whatever Lavinia does, she always seems to come back unscathed. Now let's get you home.
Chapter 18. Cooking with Prangel. Chickweed and unicorn horn. Slow-basted zombie.
Home. Such a wonderful word. I had no idea what it meant, but it sounded nice.
Somewhere along the trail back to camp, my mind must have detached from my body. I don't remember passing out. I don't remember reaching the valley. But at some point, my consciousness drifted away like an escaped helium balloon. I dreamed of homes. Had I ever really had one?
Delos was my birthplace, but only because my pregnant mother Leto took refuge there to escape Hera's wrath. The island served as an emergency sanctuary for my sister and me too, but it never felt like home, any more than the backseat of a taxi would feel like home to a child born on the way to a hospital.
Mount Olympus? I had a palace there. I visited for the holidays.
But it always felt more like the place my dad lived with my stepmom.
The Palace of the Sun? That was Helios's old crib. I'd just redecorated.
Even Delphi, home of my greatest oracle, had originally been the lair of Python. Try as you might, you can never get the smell of old snakeskin out of a volcanic cavern.
Sad to say, in my 4,000-plus years, the times I'd felt most at home had all happened during the past few months. At Camp Half-Blood, sharing a cabin with my demigod children, at the way station with Emma, Joe, Georgina, Leo, and Calypso, all of us sitting around the dinner table, chopping vegetables from the garden for dinner, at the cistern in Palm Springs, with Meg, Grover, Melly, Coach Hedge, and a prickly assortment of cactus dryads, and now at Camp Jupiter, where the anxious, grief-stricken Romans, despite their many problems, despite the fact that I brought misery and disaster wherever I went, had welcomed me with respect, a room above their coffee shop, and some lovely bed linens to wear. These places were homes. Whether I deserved to be part of them or not, that was a different question. I wanted to linger in those good memories. I suspected I might be dying, perhaps in a coma on the forest floor, as ghoul poison spread through my veins. I wanted my last thoughts to be happy ones. My brain had different ideas. I found myself in the cavern of Delphi. Nearby, dragging himself through the darkness, wreathed in orange and yellow smoke, was the all-too-familiar shape of Python. Like the world's largest and most rancid Komodo dragon. His smell was oppressively sour, a physical pressure that constricted my lungs and made my sinuses scream. His eyes cut through the sulfuric vapor like headlamps.
"You think it matters?"
Python's booming voice rattled my teeth.
"These little victories, you think they lead to something?"
I couldn't speak. My mouth still tasted like bubblegum. I was grateful for the sickly sweetness, a reminder that a world existed outside of this cave of horrors. Python lumbered closer. I wanted to grab my bow, but my arms were paralyzed.
"It was for nothing,"
he said.
"The deaths you caused, the deaths you will cause, they don't matter. If you win every battle, you will still lose the war. As usual, you don't understand the true stakes. Face me, and you will die."
He opened his vast maw. Slavering reptilian lips pulled over glistening teeth. Gah! My eyes flew open. My limbs flailed.
"Oh, good," said a voice. "You're awake."
I was lying on the ground inside some sort of wooden structure like, a stable. The smells of hay and horse manure filled my nostrils. A burlap blanket prickled against my back. Peering down at me were two unfamiliar faces. One belonged to a handsome young man with silky black hair cresting over his wide sepia forehead. The other face belonged to a unicorn. Its muzzle glistened with mucus. Its startled blue eyes, wide and unblinking, fixed on me as if I might be a tasty bag of oats. Stuck on the tip of its horn was a crank-handled rotary cheese grater.
"Gah!"
I said again.
"Calm down, dummy,"
Meg said, somewhere to my left.
"You're with friends."
I couldn't see her. My peripheral vision was still blurry and pink. I pointed weakly at the unicorn.
"Cheese grater."
"Yes," said the lovely young man. "It's the easiest way to get a dose of horn shavings directly into the wound. Buster doesn't mind, do you, Buster?" Buster the unicorn continued to stare at me. I wondered if he was even alive, or just a prop unicorn they had wheeled in. "My name's Prangel," said the young man. "Head healer for the Legion. I worked on you when you first got here, but we didn't really meet then since, well, you were unconscious. I'm a son of Asclepius. I guess that makes you my grandpa." I moaned. "Please don't call me grandpa. I feel terrible enough already. Are the others all right? Lavinia? Hazel?" Meg hovered into view. Her glasses were clean. Her hair was washed and her clothes were changed, so I must have been out for quite a while.
"We're all fine. Lavinia got back right after we did. But you almost died."
She sounded annoyed, as if my death would have inconvenienced her greatly.
"You should have told me how bad that cut was."
"I thought
I assumed it would heal. Prangel knit his eyebrows. Yes, well, it should have. You got excellent care, if I do say so myself. We know about ghoul infections. They're usually curable if we catch them within 24 hours. But you, Meg said, scowling at me, you aren't responding to treatment. That's not my fault. It could be your godly side, Prangel mused. I've never had a patient who was a former immortal. That might make you resistant to demigod healing, or more susceptible to undead scratches. I just don't know. I sat up on my elbows. I was bare-chested. My wound had been rebandaged, so I couldn't tell how bad it looked underneath. But the pain had subsided to a dull ache. Tendrils of purple infection still snaked from my belly, up my chest and down my arms, but their color had faded to a faint lavender. Whatever you did obviously helped, I said. We'll see. Prangel's frown was not encouraging. I tried a special concoction, a kind of magical equivalent to broad-spectrum antibiotics. It required a special strain of Stellaria media, magical chickweed, that doesn't grow in Northern California. It grows here now, Meg announced. Yes, Prangel agreed with a smile. I may have to keep Meg around. She's pretty handy for growing medicinal plants. Meg blushed. Buster still hadn't moved or blinked. I helped Prangel occasionally put a spoon under the unicorn's nostrils to make sure he was still breathing. At any rate, Prangel